53. Santa Claus's Headquarters. Parts of Lev's house, Flynn thought, climbing after Netherton, Lobier behind her, were really a lot like any house. The kitchen, for instance, smelled of bacon, even though it had a stove half the size of the Airstream. But then there was the art gallery, which looked to be most of the length of a football field, and the garage below that, and whatever might be farther down. But these stairs were just stairs, wooden, polished, a long tongue of what she guessed was Turkish carpet up them, fastened with brass rods and fancy hooks, looked walked on, like people lived here. At a square landing, the stairs turned right, then ended on a hallway. Old-fashioned furniture, paintings, and mirrors in big frames, incandescent bulbs, frosted glass. And Netherton, ahead of her, walking through open double doors, into the gold-trimmed forest green of the Hefty Mart Santa's headquarters display. They always set it up in a window, just after Halloween. The holograms changed every year, but the room had been what she'd loved. This was better, realer, and she wondered why they'd do that. But now Lobier was guiding her in, hand on her shoulder, pulling out a chair for her at the long dark table. Dark green curtains hid tall windows, the others coming in behind them, Ash and Ossine and Lev, then Connor. Lev turned to close the doors, Connor watching him.
"Be seated, Mr. Murphy," said Lobier, who was wearing a sort of mannish pantsuit. "You aren't playing butler now."
Ossine took a seat across from Flynn, Ash beside him. Lobier sat in one of two tall green armchairs at the head of the table, Lev in the other. Connor lounged back against a dark green wall, beside something she thought was probably a sideboard, with a silver tray on it, and on that, one of those cut glass bottles with matching glasses. Netherton, still standing, seemed to be looking at that, but then he looked around, blinked, sat down beside Flynn.
"Delighted to see you," Lev said to Lobier. "No solicitor's evident," she said. "Most cordial." "They haven't been convinced that they're entirely unnecessary, but they've agreed to be less obviously present."
"More pleasant in any case," Lobier said. She looked around at the rest of them.
"I wish to propose a course of action."
"Please," said Lev.
"Thank you.
Tuesday evening, in 4 days' time, Deirdre West hosts a gathering, the venue yet to be announced, possibly one of the guild halls. Her guest list, so far, is interesting."
She looked at Lev. "The Remembrancer himself may be there. Lesser faces from the city. We've been unable to determine even an ostensible purpose. I would suggest, Mr. Netherton," and Flynn saw Netherton's eyes narrow slightly, "that you might, in your way, be able to conjure up some sufficiently vivid rationale for an invitation."
"For whom?"
asked Netherton, beside Flynn. He sat close to the table, hunched forward, like someone holding cards.
"You yourself," said Lobier. "Plus one." "I don't know that she'd even return my call," said Netherton. "She hasn't tried to get in touch."
"I'm perfectly aware of that," Lobier said. "But you could, if I understand your method, find a narrative that leads quite naturally to her inviting you. I'll tell you when I think it best for you to approach her. Recently, former lover may be awkward as entrances go, but not without traction. If you're entirely unwilling, however, I see no way of going forward."
Her hair white as the crown Macon had printed in Fabot.
"You'd be taking Flynn, allowing her to survey Deirdre's guests."
She looked at Flynn.
"You'll be looking for the man you saw on Aelita West's balcony."
"These are rich people, right?" Flynn asked.
"Indeed," said Lobier.
"So why isn't there footage out the ass on whoever was at that party?" Flynn asked. "Why isn't there any record of what I saw? What about those paparazzi? Why was I even there?" She noticed how little space Connor was managing to take up, big as his peripheral was, against the wall. He looked like he'd just found himself there, hadn't thought about it yet. He winked at her.
Yours is a relatively evolved culture of mass surveillance, Lobier said. Ours, much more so. Mr. Zubov's house here, internally at least, is a rare exception. Not so much a matter of great expense as one of great influence.
What's that mean?
A matter of whom one knows, said Lobier, and of what they consider knowing you to be worth.
The deal that gets you privacy is funny?
Our world itself is funny, said Lobier. Elita West's soiree was held under a somewhat similar protocol, but temporary, quasi-diplomatic. Nothing by agreement was recorded. Not by Elita Systems, nor Edenmere Mansions, nor by your drone. News agencies and freelancers were kept away. That was the nature of your job, in fact.
He might be at this party?
Possibly, said Lobier. We shan't know, if you can't attend.
Get us in, Flynn said to Netherton. He looked at her, then at Lobier, closed his eyes, opened them.
Annie Koresh, he said. Neo-primitivist curator. English, in spite of the name. Deirdre met her with me at a working lunch in the Cornot. Later, I convinced her that Annie had a flattering theory about the artistic progress of her career. Now Annie is unable to attend her party physically, to her very great regret, but would be delighted to accompany me via...
He nodded toward Flynn.
Peripheral. Thank you, Mr. Netherton, Lobier said.
I hadn't the least doubt in you.
On the other hand, Netherton said, according to Rainey, she may think I killed her sister, or her friends spreading the rumour that I did.
He stood.
So I think that calls for a drink.
He walked around the end of the table. Flynn saw Connor's peripheral's eyes follow him.
Who else will have one?
Netherton asked, over his shoulder.
Wouldn't mind, said Lev. Nor I, said Ossian.
Too early for me, thank you, said Lobier. Ash said nothing.
Netherton brought the silver tray, with its bottles and glasses, to the table.
Mr. Penske will be going along as well, Lobier said to Netherton, as your security. To attend sans security would single you out.
Up to Flynn,
said Connor.
You're coming, Flynn told him.
He nodded. Netherton was pouring the whiskey, if that was what it was, into three glasses.
We need to buy the governor, Flynn said. Shit's happening. Shooting on our property.
In progress, said Ossian, as Netherton passed him a glass, then took the other two to Lev, who took one.
Cheers, said Netherton. The three of them raised glasses, drank. Netherton put his down, empty, on the table. Lev's joined it there, almost untouched. Ossian swirled the whiskey, smelled it, sipped again.
Is that it? Flynn asked Lobier.
I need to go back, see Burton, Connor too.
I have to be going myself, said Lobier, standing.
We'll stay in touch. Smiling, nodding to them, looking pleased, she left the room, Lev behind her. Flynn didn't think of tall people as scuttling, ordinarily, but she thought Lev scuttled after Lobier, like she was the key to something he wanted bad. They went down the stairs.
Where do we park these? Flynn asked, meaning the peripherals.
We'll be a while.
The Mercedes, said Ash. Yours is due a nutrient infusion, so we'll do that while you're away.
She stood, the Irishman putting down his glass and rising with her.
Flynn started to push her chair back, but then Connor was pulling it back for her. She hadn't seen him come around the table. His peripheral smelled of aftershave or something, citrusy, metallic. She stood up.
Netherton picked up Lev's glass.
The master cabin has a larger bed, he said to Connor. You can use that.
He took a sip of Lev's whiskey.
Ash led the way out of what Flynn now understood wasn't really meant to be Santa's headquarters, however much it looked like it. Netherton swallowed the last of Lev's whiskey, and they all went downstairs, then into the elevator to the garage.
You may find your re-entry disorienting, said Ash beside her in the elevator.
I didn't before.
There's a cumulative effect, aside from jet lag.
Jet lag?
The endocrine equivalent. You're 5 hours behind London time, where you are. Plus, there's an inherent 6-hour difference between the time here and the time in your continuum.
Why?
Purely accidental. Established when we happened to manage to send our first message to your Columbia. That remains fixed. Do you suffer much from jet lag?
Never had it, Flynn said. Flying's too expensive. Burton had it in the Marines.
Aside from that, the more time you spend here, the more likely you are to notice dissonance on returning. Your peripheral sensorium is less multiplex than your own. You may find your own sensorium seems richer, but not pleasantly so. More meaty, some say. You'll have gotten used to a slightly attenuated perceptual array, though you likely don't notice it now.
That's a problem?
Not really, but best be aware that it happens.
The bronze doors opened. Ossian drove them to Netherton's RV in a golf cart that made no more noise than the elevator. Netherton had taken the seat beside hers. She could smell the whiskey. Connor sat behind him. Those rafters lit up, one after another, as the cart rolled under them, past grills and headlights of all those old cars. She turned, looking back at Connor.
Who have you got at your place when you get back?
Macon, maybe.
Ash says it might be weird for me. Might be weird for you, too. Like jet lag and stuff.
Connor grinned, through the peripheral's bone structure, but somehow it was totally him.
I can do that standing on my head. When we coming back?
He widened the peripheral's eyes.
I don't know, but it won't be that long. You need to eat. Sleep if you can.
What are you doing there?
Trying to find out what's going on, she said, as she saw that headless robot exercise thing, standing where they'd left it.